The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
I'm the cat with the bass and drum, going around like bum, bum, bum.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm the cat with the bass and drum, going around like bum, bum, bum. What's grooving? I'm moving. I like your style of lumping. How charming, just a rapper. Load him up and eat the snapper.
We're back at the races. About almost 5 minutes in. Hour two. On a Tuesday, Andy joins us from the New York Racing Association. Got a really good week that is already in the books, ready for your handicapping pleasure. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. And
I'm glad to hear it.
It's our anniversary, Andy, me and Tina. 8 years.
Really? I say congratulations to you and center my condolences.
Exactly. Exactly. I teed it up for you there. I knew that.
You know what would be a perfect gift for her, I think?
Tell me.
The new Demi Moore memoir coming out today.
I take it you'll be over at the bookstore waiting.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah. As soon as I finish the Judd Nelson memoir, I'm going to rip right into that. Memoirs that needed to be written. You know, hopefully the whole cast of St. Elmo's Fire will get get their own memoir.
They could put it in a collection, one of those boxed collections.
Yeah. Yeah. Reason to go on living.
Well, lots of reasons to look forward and, I mentioned, you know, I wanted to get a handle on what's coming up Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I mean, we'll look back at the weekend, obviously, but I just kept printing out races tomorrow and Thursday and Friday. You got the two stakes for the state bred 2 year olds, but there's lots of other good action. Let's talk about the weekend first, and the Pebbles obviously was the stake, and people were lining up against Chad, but Blowout and Seek and Destroy, too good.
Well, what price were they? 5-2 and 3-1? 2-1, 5-2? I mean, well, they were big prices.
Yeah, actually.
Right?
Yeah, they were, now that you mention it. That's a good point.
Well, I mean, it was yet another race where nobody wanted to lead.
Yep.
Right? Because no speeds have won that wider turf that's gotten really firm. Well, Speed never won races in New York, so therefore it's understandable that everybody wants to take back, and some poor sap always ends up on the lead and wins. You know, I mean, Blois's a nice horse, and she's probably better in a one-turn mile. She also got a lot her own way in that race. I think Seaton's Rodri ran well to be second, considering the way the race set up. East, who was favored, who I liked. I mean, she was ranked, understandably, but it's hard when you've got a slow pace up front and they're sort of, you know, caught behind. I thought Ladder did a good job getting her settled. I think it was Manny. And she just, you know, couldn't really finish and didn't get an outside run. But, you know, it's more, I think those are nice horses, and Blanc's a nice horse, and she's proved it. I mean, it's not like she hasn't run well in other races. And probably that race in the Lake Placid last time, mile 16th, and the turf was raining out. And, you know, I know super slow pace, but in the end, Dave Varenka, they're probably slightly better horses than these. And she's nice. You know, she's found her sort of niche. You know, she's probably at a grade three level, which is not so bad.
No, that horse of, I thought the horse of Clement, that Feel Glorious, you get the sense.
She ran fine there. She actually,
yeah,
she ran fine.
There might be something to her.
Yeah, she ran better than she ran in the Lake Placid. She sort of got lost in that race a little bit. Yeah, no, she's okay. Yeah. And we'll see which ones come back. I think we'll run to Sands Point in second week of October, the mile and eighth, and we'll see who comes back for that. I mean, I'm not sure how you do running that race a week before the QE2, and it's not like the three-year-old filly division this year has been, you know, a ton of players, but we'll see who runs there and who runs in Keeneland. And they're sort of mirrors of each other, right? Except one's in grade one.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about a two-year-old.
Okay.
From Saturday.
Ask me about a two-year-old. Any two-year-old. Secondary market?
Yes. And the way that race was bet,
well, there was a lot of chatter that the Pletcher horse was a freak, as they like to say. You know, the term freak is like, in racing, has become like the abuse of the term great, right? You know, this horse is great. There are very few great horses. There are even less freaks, you know? So she didn't break. Once she didn't break, the Pletcher, Mrs. S, the first-time starter,
yes,
he's way behind it, especially because the track has been very kind inside runners, the main track. And Secondary Market, who would run extremely well in her debut, when we showed the whole race on Talking Horses, had a genuine trip and ran through a genuine trip in a race that may or may not have been that strong. I mean, horses have come out of it actually and run okay, ones that were placed in realistic spots. But she ran very well through a lot of trouble and a lot of bad things happening to her. And this race, everything good happened to her, right? Horses are unlucky until they're not, you know. Like Tacitus one day is going to stop being unlucky. He's going to start winning
these
races. Right. The foolishness of suggesting that he's sort of trouble-prone horse, just beyond idiotic. You know, Secondary Market got the right trip, and Mrs. S got the wrong one. And Secondary Market won by 5.5 lengths. Would it have been different if Mrs. S broke? Maybe. I don't know. Probably not, but it's not impossible. Race got a 78 buyer, which for this two-year-old filly crop is good. I mean, it's faster, right, than, you know, the figs that we've been seeing, right? What would you see? 77, I think, in the Pocahontas?
Yeah.
Or
70, in the Pocahontas.
Yeah, and so, you know, we're seeing the two-year-old filly so far, horses running in the 70s, mid to high 70s at most. By Mrs. Danvers, I think, is one of the few fillies that's gone over 80. And she broke her maiden, that horse for Shug. I imagine we'll be seeing her. I imagine between her and that maiden breaker Shug had the last weekend, you know, you may well see one in the Alcibiades, one of them running in the Frisette. But the two-year-old filly crop so far is just not, unless there's somebody lurking out there that I'm not aware of, has not been that fast. The two-year-old colts, there are some good two-year-old colts out there so far. And but right now, there's you know, this is the kind of filly region, if there was one horse that was running big numbers, you know, like a Songbird did, they'd be a dominant horse in the division. But there isn't that horse right now. Doesn't mean that she won't show up. you know, maybe they're a little slow to come around, and we'll start to see them in October or even November, whether it's here around California.
You know who ran a nice, speaking of two-year-olds, I know it's, you know, it's a turf sprint, so it's not, doesn't translate per se, but that horse of Larry Goichman's, that My Sassy Sarah, the homebred, the summer front filly on Friday.
What big did she get?
78.
Yeah, well, she did run. Yeah, she improved dramatically off her debut where she hung like a chandelier. Michelle Nevin horses often need a race, so, you know, just because she finished well and but hung like that, I think it, you know, confused me, and I was clearly wrong. She clearly improved a lot. She got a perfect trip, but she ran. And I agree. She did run.
You know, the same day, going back to Friday again, we were in the car on the way up to the Thousand Islands, and I was watching that
week on each.
No, that Coffee Crush.
Well, she's a good example of how the turf is playing the Widener, right? She just kept running fast and running away from them. The pace seemed almost too fast to be true. And they ended up tiring from chasing her, and she just galloped away. She must have run a big number in that race, right?
96.
Yeah. I always 96. Like to see Jimmy Toner win.
Always. And just an FYI, and it's one of the reasons I even kind of looked at that race. You remember the nice mare, Wasted Tears, that Bart Evans had, and he still owns her.
Yeah,
and breeds.
The foal got scratched on
yes.
Saturday.
Look,
and
look me over.
She's running on Wednesday or Thursday, right?
Exactly. Thursday? Look
five
me
and
over.
A half. They scratched her in a mile, and she's running 5.5. That 5.5 that she's in on Thursday looks like a very tough race. I mean, you've got that Fletcher horse, Boston Beauties, that ran very well first time out. You find voting agreement. In fact, ahead of Indochine, who won a very slow maiden race on Saturday. But that horse looks good. But there's a lot of horses there that are just like a lot of pedigrees and things in that race.
Big time. And I'm glad you brought it up. And we can actually even
you
use
brought it
to,
up.
Well, that, you know, that you kind of dug into that race because.
I elaborated,
you know,
Steve. I added
yes,
color.
Yes, you did.
That's
you
what
did.
I do.
That's you. That's you.
You brought it up. Here's a
we all tee it up.
Color
we
guy. Just, it's a post-color guy relationship, Steve.
Exactly.
You handled it very well.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't think Greg Wolf and Lafitte have anything to worry about.
I don't think anyone has anything to worry about. Except for Tina.
Yes, exactly. The reference point is that tomorrow, Thursday and Friday, I know people have been a little grumpy about the first 2 weeks of Belmont. Dig into Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. There's a lot of good racing here even before we get to the weekend.
Okay. I have.
And you're not impressed? You're not excited?
No, I'm not arguing. I don't know. I'm thinking about going to movies. I'm thinking about going to Goldfinch. I know it got bad reviews, but I read the book.
It got very bad reviews, right?
Yeah. It's a difficult book to make a movie. But I thought the book was interesting, so I'll go see the movie.
Tina read it. It's downstairs. It's funny. I said to her, do you want to see the Goldfinch?
It's way too erudite for you.
Thank
pretty
you,
long
you.
For you.
Really? All right. Is it?
Yeah. I've read a number of books like that. You should read Chances Are, the new Richard Russo book. That's good. You'd like that.
You know, this is the second time you've mentioned Chances Are. I love the movie years ago with Ryan O'Neill and
different movie, Cybill Shepherd.
And Robert, very young Robert Downey
Jr. Cybill Shepherd?
And Cybill Shepherd, yes.
Have you ever seen any Robert Downey Jr.'s father's movies? Putney Swope?
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
Sort of 60s or 70s underground
type
movies, right?
Exactly, exactly. Exactly. Cassavetes.
Anyway,
stuff.
Where were we?
This week. You got the two stakes for the New York Breds, and I guess Barkley. I guess Barkley's got bigger plans for.
He just had his first work back. They said he had a minor shin issue, and he's back working. And Barkley's deciding, I think, there whether they're going to push to the Champagne or think more like the Sleepy Hollow on the New York Red Showcase.
Right.
It's only a matter of time, which is the law. Well, let's see. Wednesday is one of the divisions, right?
Yes, you got the girls first.
Yeah. I mean, you've got Irish Dancing coming back for Christophe versus Fierce Lady and sort of Time Limit. Be interesting. Irish Dancing was very impressive, breaking her maiden. Actors Lady, though, ran well last time. They're the main two. Munaki is back on Friday against that city horse of Kristoff's. I'm looking through right now. Well, what would you like me to discuss, Steve? I can discuss anything. But you have to lead me there. We can talk about Parks having a mile dirt race the same day as the Kelso. What's the point? What's the point? Seriously, what is the point? Is that their job to sort of interfere with the racing program? We don't have enough races running on top of each other that we needed a new race to run on top of each of these races.
Well, they did have that. They did have what they called the Pennsylvania Derby Champion Stake, and I think that's just a wrinkle on that because that was like a mile. And
no,
a
it's a mile dirt race for older horses on the same day that the Kelso is being run.
Well, they were running a mile and maybe a 16th race.
What does that have for 3-year-olds?
For olders.
What's the point? What's the point? All these. What is the point? It's bad enough the Pennsylvania Derby was graded to a grade one, which all it does is distract, you know, 3-year-old colts from running in the race like the Jockey Club Gold Cup. It's just a constant perversion of the fall and the way racing, you know, used to be run, and it's not to a benefit. But hey, at least the maiden claimer gets to run in the Pennsylvania Derby, so there's that.
I mentioned that, and I've said I would get back to it. Racing secretaries, and right in the conditions of the Pennsylvania Derby, it says racing secretary reserves the right to refuse and or deny.
I know,
nomination
I saw on your board.
Or entry. And I, you know, I'm not somebody that, you know, a lot of people attack Ron Paolucci for, you know, running horses in crazy spots or what they're perceived to be crazy spots, and I generally don't. Rail against this, but there's a part of this that is really sort of awkward. The fact that you have to supplement for 10,000, and you think, well, who's gonna enter for 10,000?
They must have waived the supplemental fee. They must have waived the supplemental.
Well, here's the thing about that.
Pay
10,000. Here's the thing: you 10,000 supplement, 2,000 to enter, 3,000 to run. So that's 15,000. You get your money back anyway.
Yeah, so, but I cannot. I don't believe this horse is running for zero.
I don't really understand. This is, you know, this isn't. If
do we know? Do we know if the supplemental fee was waived? That's really the question.
I don't. We don't. But I mean, this horse can only get in the way.
Right.
This is a horse that's 20 lengths.
I mean, I guess that's the reason that horse, the 12 claimer, ran in the prep for the cotillion. She finished 6 feet and 30 lengths because she got paid for sixth. I don't approve of it, but that's just the way it is. She's re-entered in the cotillion. Now there's like 11 in there. I assume they're going to scratch if all of them are going, right? Because I don't think, do you get any money for 11th, or do they pay 20,000 down to 11th too?
I'd have to see the conditions. Same thing like they...
I can't see the conditions because they're not in the header in the form, at least in the initial, formulator PPs. I understand they like to have more stars in races, but come on.
No, I agree. And that race didn't need it. It's got a nice field anyway.
Cotillion certainly didn't.
No, that's what I mean. You had a very solid group there. You didn't need, you don't need a.
I'm glad to see this. Mr. Money is finally deviating from these sort of meaningless races with big purses and running against, you know, some of the higher echelon horses in this division. See what he does, because he does belong with them. And, you know, probable runs back to 104 Byer. He got at Del Mar last time. He's going to be very, very tough to beat. But I also think Whirlwill's going to run very well in this race. You know, he's the forgotten horse. He's going to end up fourth choice in this race. And we all talk so much about Tastis, who obviously had the trip because of the stumble at the start, but also because he ended up down the deeper inside or towards the deeper inside. Well, Whirlwill spent a great deal of the race right on the rail. And he's sort of been ignored. people are forgetting that he had quite a bit of a trip in the Jim Dandy as well by spending so much time on the rail. I think Warren Will's going to run well in the PA Derby. I'm not saying he's going to win, but I think he's going to run well in here.
No, it does give you, you know, you look at the horses that when trying to figure out the speed. I mean, you've got really almost everybody in here that has shown interest in being involved, and that makes it, you know, that makes it fascinating with Maximum Security drawing outside. He's the seven. You haven't seen him. Well, he drafts. I mean, he likes to be with the in the vanguard, as Tom Durkin would say.
Right.
He's gotten speedier as the year has gone on.
I'll consider watching it. Are you surprised that Bellarmina is going to ship the Parks to run this race, as opposed to staying out west where the older fillies and mares don't seem to be particularly competitive this year?
I was a little surprised to see her. Well, I also thought that I also had the feeling that Callahan, after the test, you know, after she ran very nicely in the test.
No, she ran terribly in the test, but anyway.
She ran okay. I mean, nobody
didn't run nicely in the test. Nobody ran besides the first two.
The top
two. Weird race. Horses have run out of the race, but it's like the horses that were behind the top two just evaporated.
Fair enough.
It's just a weird race. I don't know what happened exactly. It was weird.
Well, she certainly has worked very sharp since the test, and I thought
been
maybe.
She's a good workhorse, though, hasn't she?
Well, she's toting some bullets that she didn't tote into
right,
the test.
Right. I always felt like she was a good workhorse. I could be wrong.
Well, here's the thing again. I thought that maybe they would concentrate, you know, on the filly and mare sprint. And in fact, Dick Powell and I were just talking coming out of last night at Presque Isle.
Well, they could use this to turn back.
That's true. That's true, actually.
I mean, you're supposed to be looking at the filly and mare sprint, because the filly and mare sprint just doesn't seem to be super strong unless
Comes
runs a faster race, gets back to running faster races.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, once again, that division, I mean, it was, you know, obviously last year's filly and mare sprint was probably one of the weakest older Breeders' Cup races maybe ever run. Maybe it was the weakest ever run. Competitive, but not, you know, to competitive race, a fun race, but very weak on quality. Now Marley's Freedom seems to be out, right?
Yeah,
Mary,
she's
out. She in game. So what happened with Game Winner now?
He's just not coming around. He just hasn't. Baffert won.
So he's going to be retired.
He said he's got. Baffert said that he wants to talk it over with Gary West, that he'd like to bring him back as a 4-year-old.
Well, doesn't he feel like a horse, though, that may well have signed a stud agreement? I'm just guessing. I don't know this at all. But a lot of times the best 3-year-olds have signed, you know, the best 2-year-olds sign stud agreements at the end of their 2-year-old year, which requires them to retire the 3-year-old year. And I mean, in some cases
right.
They say, well, if a horse hasn't really done anything, that will bring the horse back to race because it can actually gain value by racing. And maybe that would be the case with him. I mean, this is all hypothetical. I'm just guessing here. I don't have one single piece of information whatsoever. And listen, it doesn't seem like Gary and Mary West are people that rush to retire horses. So I'm not, but it's not even a question of rushing. Like, owners have rights to take money off the table. I'm not one of those. I can't believe they're retiring this horse, you know? They have a right. People who put a lot of money in the game, like Gary and Mary West do, if somebody wants to give them a lot of money, especially during their 2-year-old or early in the 3-year-old year, to retire their horse at the end of 3, you can't knock people who continually reinvest in the game for taking some money off the table. You simply can't. It's an unpopular decision, I understand. I'm sure that there are plenty of owners that have done it and said, geez, I wish I could have raced my horse, but... And just because somebody has a lot of money doesn't mean that we have the right to dictate how they should spend their money. They support the game, and they have a right to keep the ball rolling, per se. But I just wonder if the case with Game Winner was, let's face it, last year, if one horse was getting a stud deal, it was going to Game Winner, right? He was a 2-year-old champion.
Yeah.
He was undefeated, a multiple grade one winner. So if somebody's getting a stud deal, he was. So now it's possible he has one, and they're going to say, I don't know, he didn't do anything as a 3-year-old, right? Lost a couple of races and got hurt, you know? And maybe he really can improve his value by racing next year. But if he's not going to make the Breeders' Cup, he's not making the Pegasus either, right? Are they going to run that race next year, the Pegasus?
They're running Pegasus contest qualifiers and feeders, so they're talking about that.
Prep. Use that as epic prep. I'm not even kidding. I'm not going to even start.
Don't
about this.
Please don't start about this. Yes, yesterday. Thank you.
You had Nova.
Let's run down. I haven't had a chance to talk about
this. You really have to have the Middle East your 20th trips. Anyway, sorry, I digress badly.
live from Riyadh. here's the field for the cotillion. For those that haven't seen that field, Serengeti Empress draws the rail for the third straight race.
It's not a bad rail to draw for her.
Agreed, except that that's not a great racetrack to be inside.
The rail's good a lot of days, especially in Pennsylvania Derby days. So
that's fair.
She's the speed, she can get off the inside. Yeah. Garan is the 8. Bellarmine's like the 9. That's like a 10, and Jayhawk's the 11.
How about we run this down from the rail? How about that? That'll make it easy for the
What's
numbers.
The difference? The others aren't really that significant, are they?
Well, there's a couple that people might want to know about. Serengeti Empress from the rail, a fleet destiny, Uriah St. Louis, who loves the entry.
Let's not discuss her. Why don't you just give their name? She's
loves the entry box. Street Band for Larry Jones.
She's not bad.
She's okay with Sophie Doyle. Jeltrin. Jeltrin, who's had a very Jeltrin, a nice horse. Nice horse.
But she's not bad, yeah.
Agreed. Collegeville Girl, our friend Richie Vega.
I bet her two back, and then she paid 1080 in a four horse field at Parks in her next race. I bet her in Saratoga, a year layup. Good. She has no chance near, doesn't belong in the race. She can only get in the way.
Well, Saturday she.
She doesn't belong in the race.
All right. Horologist, the John Mazza, the wonderful story with
John Mazza. Mom and Oaks, I think.
She won the Monmouth Oaks.
Oh, she won. She won to be Jayhawk. Okay. Jayhawk.
Yes. Then there is the
12-5 claimer.
The 12-5 claimer, which is just crazy, called She Makes Me Smile. Guarana, the
undefeated. She's not making me smile.
No. The Guarana, the wonderful Three Chimneys homebred, and 3 for 3. Sweet Sammy D is the horse that finished third in the Monmouth Oaks. Bellafina, the 10, and Jayhawk draws the difficult assignment from the 11.
She wasn't winning anyway.
She does get Joel Rosario back.
I guess she's still not winning. She's just not the same horse as 3 as she was at 2.
No.
It's weird.
No.
It's weird.
No.
She really.
No, it just has not. I mean, even with the win at Delaware.
Are you heading down?
Yeah, we'll be there.
Is that like an eighth anniversary present from you to Tina?
Yes, it is.
A lovely weekend at Parks.
We spent our anniversary at Parks a couple of years ago. The 17th was the Saturday, and we were there. But we have a great ritual. This is the fourth year in a row. We go down Friday night.
Got the Eagles coming up on Saturday.
Eagles on
Sunday.
Yep, Eagles-Lions
on
Sunday.
This is like your version of the Silver Lions playbook, right?
Yes, exactly.
So which role do you see yourself in? Kevin Hart or De Niro?
Well, what about John Ortiz? Can't I be John Ortiz?
No. He's reasonably sane in it.
Well, then I would. Then I'd have to gravitate.
Wife.
Yes, yes. I guess I got to be De Niro. I guess I have to be De Niro.
Anything else? We done?
I think we are done. Marshall Graham is going to join us next.
Give him my best.
Have you had Marshall? Have you had him on your show on the radio?
No. I actually asked him because I thought he might be in for the Travers, but I sort of misread that. But no, he was in early in the year. I saw him quite a bit.
Yeah, he typically has to leave by then because school gets Rhodes is about
That's
to start
right.
school.
Exactly right.
He would be a good, yeah, he's always interesting.
He's great. Yeah. Okay. See you later.
Thanks so much. Andy Serling, everybody. And you see him on the Belmont live shows. That's him. That's Andy. And, you'll see him. You might see him at the movie theater if you're going to the Goldfinch. It's at the Baronet Cornet. He's gone, so he's not even getting these cute references. Big news out of MetLife Stadium. The beleaguered Giants. The Eli Manning era is over. Mercifully. Let's take a break. Exactly 90 in. 90 to come. Marshall Graham is going to join us. Hey, we're going to talk about what he loves talking about, the economics of carryovers and positive expectation. I want him to explain it. We're going to talk to Bill Downs in a little bit, John White as well, and more. Second half on this Tuesday at the Races, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sormon Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Under the island, middle of a mountain, there is a big bad booming system. Woofers and tweeters, amplifiers, melted wires, the party's exploded, chorus corroded, underground, the Puget Sound, causing a shifting and a drifting, big black boombox, stuck in the high rock, it's in there flowing, it's in there growing, I don't believe me, that this scenery could be a cold-blooded cure, it's gonna blow.
We're back at the races. 25 minutes to the top, and as promised yesterday, and actually I was even hinting at it late last week when the Stronach pick five Friday, the carryover going into Friday, Marshall Graham, Rhodes College and, of course, 10-strike racing. But Marshall's economic bend leads him to keep everybody informed among Twitter viewers as to the positive expectation opportunities when we get these kinds of carryovers. And this pick, these pick fives, and Stronach five was a dollar minimum, as Johnny discussed yesterday, and the one at Churchill was 50 cents, and the one at Prairie Meadows last Tuesday night, a week ago tonight, was also 50 cents. But the kind of payouts in this scenario is when everybody has to swing into action. Everybody, you know, hears about the jackpot force outs, but these opportunities that, you know, are kind of random, you can't count on them. They're not coming once a week, but they are when you absolutely have to commit to, you know, taking a shot. Marshall Graham, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Always a pleasure, whatever angle it is that we're discussing, whether it's the fun that you and the partners all have with 10 Strike, and we'll get to that probably before we wrap. But I specifically wanted you to explain the dynamics of these opportunities, and I want to fold it into a discussion about how players can really shop for their you know, the places to make money when the opportunity arises. And it, you know, take it wherever you want, I suppose, starting with Friday, and then we'll go into Saturday. But, you know, the Stronach 5, explain the mechanics of what goes into these pools and why they're such a great opportunity.
Well, I mean, horse racing, betting on horses is such a tough game. We face very high takeouts as horse players. In general, relative to sports betting, our competition is very smart. The markets are very efficient. And so when you find these rare opportunities where the track is giving back more than the players are putting in, they're must plays. And, you know, you say they don't come around that often, but we've actually had five such opportunities this month. We had the Stronach 5, which is phenomenal. The Stronach 5 already is a solid bet. It has a 12% takeout. But Friday's Stronach 5 carryover of $96,000 was very solid. With that number, to sort of project what the pool size will be, I typically take a carryover and divide through by the takeout. And so you'd project with that that the pool would have about $800,000 in it. So instead, it had only $288,000. And so the player's edge was 21.64%. And what that means is that the with the carryover and the net pool after takeout, the track was returning $350,000 to bettors, and bettors had only bet $288,000. And so for every dollar bet, $1.21 was being returned to players. And so that's phenomenal value. And you could see it in the way the sequence worked out. These were the odds for the horses in the five races. 2.9 to 1, 1.7 to 1, 5.1 to 1, 1.8 to 1, 2.8 to 1. So that's four fairly low odds horses, four horses below 3 to 1, two of those four below 2 to 1, and then one at 5 to 1. That wager paid $39.97, almost $4,000 for a dollar wager. And its parlay value is only $680. It paid almost six times parlay value. So it's a tremendous opportunity for those paying attention to that carryover. And we've had, again, there were four others. This month, there was the Churchill carryover on Sunday, which also paid 5.3 times what the parlay would project. But there was the fourth out at Prairie Meadows, which paid five times parlay value. And then we had a pick five in Indiana, which carried over. And even a small little carryover in Indiana of $33,000 generated a $136,000 pool and a 3% player's edge. And then we had the strange, the pick six fourth out on closing day at Saratoga, one of the unusual ones, where there was a $793,000 carryover, about $5.3 million bet. And so the takeout was reduced to 5.25%. So it was still at its takeout, but much lower than you would normally see. It did not produce value. It only paid. It paid $23,000 for a fairly, it's fairly chalky early, but then a 22-1 long shot won, and there was a 12-1 long shot in the middle of the wager. But it paid $23,000 for the 20-cent pick six, which is only twice parlay value, and the pick five, bizarrely enough, paid $65,000. And so the pick five that day had an equivalent payout in 20-cent terms of $26,000. So sometimes you have strange outcomes, right? When you have a lot of players coming for these wagers, you have a lot of, certainly a lot of people wanting to take advantage of the positive expectations. You also have some experts jump in, and sometimes the payouts aren't what you would hope. But again, ultimately, when the track is giving back more than players are putting in, you need to jump in. You need to jump in with both hands.
I want to use the Stronach just because it the numbers. I mean, we could do the same thing actually with the Churchill Sunday, but I want you to go through the math, because this way it'll help people understand the way this thing is constructed, and for the ease of mental mathematics, say it was 97,000, call it 100,000 for the carryover, and 288,000 was bet in, call it 300,000. So the 300,000, 12% comes out, that's 36,000. That leaves the takeout that the house keeps, that's 36,000 off the 300, leaves 264 added to the carryover amount. There's 364,000 that's going to be paid back to the bettors.
Yeah, that's exactly right. 364,000 off $300,000 wagered. And so if you take that, 364 divided by 360, 364 divided by 300, right? That gives you an idea of how much is paid back per dollar. So in that case, just doing that, there's $1.21 paid back per dollar, right? And so that's a 21% player's edge. And
which
so that pretty much corresponds to exactly what we've talked about. So it's, again, for every dollar a player bets, they're getting, the expected return is $1.21. In most cases, you bet a dollar, right? Your expected return is only 70 to 85 cents, right? In this case, expected return on dollars is $1.21. And what does that mean? That ultimately means that we're going to get a charged up payout, right? So our predicted payout in this case is about 3.11 times what the parlay value would be. So the math on that is fairly straightforward as well. You just take the one plus the effective takeout on the pick five and divide through by the expected return on the win place on the win bets. Remember that when you're playing the pick four, pick five, pick six, these multi-race wagers, you are only hit with a takeout once. Right, when you play win wagers in multiple races, you're hit with a takeout every time. And so that's the advantage. That's the leverage you get, which makes the payout in these multi-race wagers higher than the parlay value, higher than what the value would be in multiple win wagers. And so we projected from that a payout that would be 3.11 times parlay value. And we actually got a payout nearly six times parlay value. So, again, it was phenomenal value in playing the Stronach 5 against what we would have expected.
There's two things out of this, Marshall, that I'd love you to elaborate on. And, you did allude to one of them. I want to include that first, and then we'll get to the back end, which is being able to pick your spots and being able to shop for value and more or less, racetrack surf and picking places where you're getting the best bang for your buck. But I would love for you to explain to people that element of the pick X's, the pick three, the pick four, the pick five in particular, as opposed to pick six and the jackpot bet, which is another strange animal that was cooked up in the lab like something in Jurassic Park. Explain why. I hear people say, the takeout on the pick four is 20%. I can't play it. Well, explain why that's not an odious number, or why even sometimes 22 or 23% is not an odious number when it comes to the multis, and why it's different than, and in fact may in some cases be a better value, and not just some cases, but is a better value than a win takeout in the high teens.
Yeah, I mean, if you have opinions in multiple races, and maybe the easiest way to think about explaining this is think about the double, right? If you have opinions in both races and you bet the double, you only hit with the takeout once. So if the takeout on the double is 22%, right, you're only hit with the takeout once for both of those opinions. If you make two win wagers, you hit the takeout twice. Right, you make one bet, right? The track takes 16% from the pool, returns 84%, and then you make your second bet in the next race. Right, again, once again, you're hit with the takeout. So what happens is, despite the fact that the win pool might have a 16% takeout, the double might have a 22% takeout, your leverage from the double, from the fact that you're only hit with a takeout once, allows it to often pay more, you know, to pay more than the parlay would project. In fact, based upon those numbers I've given you, the double should pay 1.1 times what the parlay value of those win wagers are. Meaning if you took $2, bet the first horse, and then rolled your winnings over into the second horse and hit both races, the double would pay 1.1 times that. And that effect gets larger the more legs there are in a wager. Right, and so that's again why people often gravitate towards these multi-race wagers. Sort of the noticeable example of this, I remember reading, you know, Andy Byer's classic Byer on Speed, and he talked about going to Velefendi in Turkey, and in Turkey they take out rates 50%, and I've actually been to Velefendi, and when you look up the tote board, 50% pretty much means every horse is 2-1 or less. It's really incredible what that does. And so what he notices, everyone played pick five there, because in the pick five you're only hit with a takeout once. Now again, it's awful, and I'm not suggesting anything like it, you know, we'd have no bettors with a takeout rate like that, but it shows the power of just being hit with the takeout once. And of course, many tracks offer very low takeout pick five, 15% pick five at Naira, 15% pick fives at Churchill. And then we get the opportunities for carryovers, like we saw at Indiana, at Churchill, and with Stronic 5, that, again, can be really strong positive expectations played. Now, again, you know, the other point that you made that I think is worth discussing is these forced out of these jackpot pick 5, pick 6s. And they are certainly wonderful opportunities, and they're worth playing. But I think the downside is that they're created in really onerous ways. Right, the jackpot wagers take a bunch of wagering dollars out of the betting pools, out of the hands of players. They have very high effective takeouts before the force out days. The one at Naira has a 40% takeout. The one at Gulfstream has a 52% effective takeout, because they're not only taking money out in regular terms, they're also taking money out to feed the jackpot. And so they're preying on often an uneducated public, or you know, players who are more recreational players in those to build up the pool, and then the experts all jump in and reap the proceeds when they do the force out. So I'm not in favor of the jackpot pick six, but ultimately I think that I also will play the force out. And so, you know, call me a hypocrite or whatever you will. I just, you know, those are the rare opportunities as a horse player that you have to take advantage of, even if the design and the creation of them is onerous.
On this topic, and I can't remember if I've brought this up with, you know, I had discussions with Maury Wolf and with Paul Matisse about this when we were grappling with the whole, you know, with the advent of the jackpot bet. But at what point in the accrual process, Marshall, as more people get interested,
you know, the pot, you know, using Gulfstream as an example, and actually you can start to use the New York pool as an example. New York is going to have more regular force outs than they do at Gulfstream. But there is the element of the small increment and extraneous coverage. And have you put pencil to paper at all and tried to figure out where the sweet spot is, where a critical mass happens, and there's so many extraneous combinations being covered that it serves to bring that artificial takeout number down to a manageable area? Does that exist?
I have not done the research on that. I'm collecting a data set to do that because I'm very fascinated by what you're talking about. I mean, I see your point that in there are situations where in the jackpot wagers you may have people chasing extreme values, hoping to take the whole pool down. And so it never negates the takeout, but if you have people chasing the extreme values, putting a lot of long shots on their tickets, it may juice the payouts for sort of more traditional handicapping. And so you do have situations where the multiplier on the parlay value is decent. And I think that, that bears more research. I don't know much more to sort of speculate what it might be. Again, I've seen situations where the Gulfstream pick six and the Naira pick six pay decently, and even decently relative to the pick five, despite the fact that we're in the middle of your jackpot sequence. I still think, the big problem is you're taking money out of the hands of the public. And if you're talking about the difference between the jackpot pick six with 40% and the pick five with 15%, it seems an obvious choice. I do think that the one thing we learned, and you can sort of learn it from looking at just the day one of wagering on the 20-cent pick six, moving from the $2 to 20 cents, is that people bettors, maybe a combination of casual horse players who play a lot of small tickets, do enjoy the 20-cent increment, right? I prefer the $2 increment. Maybe there's some happy medium between 20 cents and $2. But if you just look at day one of the wager, right, where there's no money in the jackpot pool, it was a pretty significant size, right, at Naira. I think if a jackpot going to be, if the track sort of insists on doing these jackpot wagers, I really like the way Churchill does it. Churchill's takeout is 15%, and then they hold 10% for the jackpot pool, for the second pool. And so their effective takeout is 23.5%. Which makes it very comparable to a lot of pick sixes, right? Even better than
right.
the old, Naira pick six carryover days.
26%.
And so 23.5%, I think, is very, right. very reasonable what they do at Churchill. I think when you get up to higher numbers, you're talking about taking a lot of money out of circulation and making it a wager that serious players have a hard time taking very seriously.
Well, and what I'm hinting at when I say negating the takeout, I mean more or less creating a scenario where the impact, the negative impact, is neutralized by what is potentially better value when you hit, basically. And this all stems from the conversations we had at the beginning with our late friend Chet Hancock. And Chet didn't care during the build-up phase that he wasn't going to hit the jackpot. He knew that on the force out day, was the day to play and play a big ticket and try to hit and hope for chaos. But day to day, he was putting together, modest tickets in the $75 to $150 range. And sometimes he was playing with a couple other guys, and they were they were looking during that build-up period when, as the bonus, as the jackpot was, you know, was careening into, you know, high six figures and then over seven figures, you know, knowing that the play that it was drawing was basically guaranteeing that, you know, unless there was a series of $40 horses, which, you know, which does happen here and there. But generally, he was just looking for the daily hit. And, you know, there were days he was cashing $10,000, $12,000, $3,000, $6,500. And it's really the area, Marshall, that has made this whole jackpot concept such a difficult thing to you know, have a definitive feel about, because there's too many smart players and serious players that are doing that, and you know, and that aren't necessarily, you know, playing on that day to hit the jackpot, you know, that the public's being taken in on.
Yeah, and look, I do think it merits research, and I do think what you're saying makes sense. I think that you know, what is creating the value in the wager is you have two components. You have people who are chasing the jackpot. Maybe you have experts or teams who are designing tickets to chase the jackpot, hoping to make a score, a giant score, with the downside being they miss the wager. They miss the wager if chalk comes in, or, you know, only a few long shots come in. And then you have other players, novice players, who are playing 20-cent tickets because they enjoy the 20-cent denomination, and they're playing it, and they're spreading too much, and they're not betting efficiently. And so, you know, you could have this combination of a lot of novice players who are hurt by the 40% takeout, but drawn in by the 20-cent wager, and therefore are losing pretty badly. And then you have the experts going towards the edge, which allows this soft middle there. And remember, think about, like, in wagering overall, right? We've had the changes in the game that's made the sports more challenging has been the change in the efficiency of the pools, right? The fact that you talk to people who bet in the 80s, 90s, I mean, even as few as 10 years ago, the pools weren't all that efficient. And so you'd see strange things that exist in the odds, strange things that existed across pools, strange payouts in the tries is not reflecting the win pool, or vice versa. And so the difference that has happened is that as more and more casual players have left the game, have been drawn in to casinos, right, with the proliferation of casinos and slot machines. I mean, all going back to the legalization of the lottery in New Hampshire, right? Casual players have left the game, right? The people who just get betting on their birthday have left the game, and now it's shark versus shark, right? So most pools you should see shark versus shark, and so maybe the jackpot pick six is a wager where you have a lot of fish in there, playing because they like the 20-cent wager, spreading too much, and then you have that allows some sharks to come in and feed on this population. But again, ultimately, it really hurts these fish, right? These casual players, because they're getting killed both by the 40% takeout and by inefficiently betting their tickets, right? I think that the one thing about being a multi-race player is you have to think a lot about ticket construction. And you have to, you know, you have to do your homework. You have to study your six races and think about ticket construction. And for most of us, I mean, you know, even point to myself, you know, I struggle race by race. And so, you know, putting together pick five or pick six, you have to have done your homework and you have to build efficient tickets. And so maybe that's where the opportunity presents itself. I still think, again, I still have real problem with it because of, you know, what it does to our betting ecosystem.
No,
but I understand your point. I don't disagree with your point.
And you referenced something that is the back end of what we were hoping to accomplish today as part of the topics. The opportunity, particularly for more casual players or, you know, fairly serious players, of stretching their bankroll and getting the most effective use and basically keeping the ball in the air longer. Because, of course, you know, the way the game is structured and, you know, with all the things you just referenced, you know, the difficulty factors and, you know, the competition against, you know, the computer groups and their efficiencies and the way in which they, you know, have really tilted the field. And then you fold in, you know, a difficult takeout and bet cost structure across the industry, what Fred Pope, you know, refers to as the inverted pyramid, and you've got your deck effectively, you know, stacked against horse players. However, that's the point of having this conversation, finding the areas to stretch your money and maybe, you know, those out people listening out that are, you know, you've been a win better and you go to the track and you're going to make, you know, six or seven win bets. You should start thinking, as we just talked about, making, you know, becoming a doubles player and marrying your opinions and, you know, having, you know, the chance to make a little more when you win and have your money stretched out a little further if you don't win. Fold in, Marshall, the way in which players can effectively, you know, keep that ball in the air with big opportunities and maybe adjusting their play and being a more discerning price shopper.
Well, I think that's the key. And I, you know, I'll give you a sort of little lesson that I learned myself. I mean, the last year, 2018, I was really excited about the Oaklawn meet. I sort of had the time at this point to handicap and bet it every day, to spend hours, you know, studying every race, to do trip notes, hired a private clocker, put together a team to, you know, sort of analyze the races and did all sorts of work on the meet. And I got destroyed. I mean, I lost, you know, 40 cents on every dollar wagered, and I was betting quite a bit and trying to bet every race. And, you know, I did the same thing for Saratoga last year in 2018, and both meets were total disasters for me. And, you know, I came to this realization that this is not for me. The idea of betting every race, forcing myself to have an opinion, you know, trying to come up with wagers, trying to bet in every pool wasn't going to work. And so, you know, for me, it was a matter of sitting on my hands, finding opportunities. And looking for opportunities where I can make scores. And so, you know, the Oaklawn pick five, my buddy Clay Sanders and I, the other partner in 10 Strike, managing partner in 10 Strike Racing, we were basically, in 2018, we were basically seeding the pool 3%. So even though the takeout, they don't have a low takeout pick five or didn't in 2018, we helped seed the pool we were doing so badly. And, you know, the difference is now, you know, I've tried to become more of a casual, more of a discerning shopper on these things. And it's not always easy. I mean, it's easy to sort of get sucked into playing the races. You know, I always have the television on, and I'm always on one of the RTN feed stations, but I've tried to be more discerning, tried to find my spots. And these pick fives, again, when their opportunities come up, they're typically fun. You're handicapping a track you haven't handicapped before. You know, it allows me to really focus on certain races and not be sort of drawn in to play everything. And so, you know, again, I look for them to play and I continue to be sort of outside of that. As much as doubles and pick threes and pick fours can be enticing, unless you really have multiple opinions that you can leverage, you can often find yourself spreading. And so I tend to be a pick one player, right? Because, again, despite the leverage you get, if you spread on both sides of a double, or if you spread in two of the three races in a pick three, even though you're getting leverage relative to the win pool and the parlay, spreading, you know, spreading over a number of horses destroys that, right? Destroys the leverage that you're getting on the takeout. So you need to be in making those bets. On non-carryover days, you need to have opinions, right? You need to have opinions on both sides of the double, right? You need to have opinions in two of the three pick three races, right? You can't, it's hard to spread your way to the finish line.
How about, you know, how about shopping the bet menus and the racetrack wagering menus and essentially cherry picking. And not only can you cherry pick, but you can also, in a lot of cases, with your ADW of choice, make sure you're aware of some of the, you know, the added bonuses that are offered, you know, including 10%, you know, 10% payout bonuses. You fold those in to some of the low takeout opportunities, whether it's the pick five. And, you know, I know that Stronach has introduced this Quinella, you know, this low takeout 10% Quinella, and people are kind of, you know, snickering that it's a Quinella. Probably, you know, probably could have just made it an exacta and you would have had the same benefit. But I think they're trying to, you know, trying to make some standalones. I applaud the effort. But do you think it's possible for people to manage their bankroll, Marshall, enough to just swing from vine to vine and pick the best opportunities, you know, based on those takeout equations? Can people have enough self-discipline to do that?
Well, I think it's tricky, right? I mean, if you're a weekend player, you know, and you get your chance to play Saratoga or Belmont or Churchill on the weekends, it's hard to sort of wait for these opportunities to come up. You know, what I would recommend is save part of your bankroll, look for these pick fives, look for promotions on your ADW, but also make sure when you're playing these pick fives, you're playing these promotions, that you are still strategic about it. I mean, you still, even with these huge players' edge, right, you still have to hit the thing. Right,
yes.
So you still have to be strategic, and they could have given me a, you know, the only way I was making money when I was playing Oakland full time in 2018 is if I were going to get 41% rebates, right? With 41% rebates, I'd have made 1%. So, you know, you still have to be strategic in what you do. If they're offering promotions on trifectas, right, you have to think about how you want to bet the try. You know, but you have to bet the try and the super. You have to be strategic about it. You have to think about something. Something happening in a particular race, like it, whether speed holds or speed collapses in a particular race, the way to bet it, or whether you key certain horses in particular positions in the tri or super. So I think that each of these wagers, as they get more complicated from a win bet, involves a lot more strategy. And so, you know, for players who are very good at betting, you know, it's probably not an issue. But for me, it's always been one. If I'm gonna steer away from the win pool, I'm gonna have to be strategic about how I set up my wager, even in the face of positive expectations. Right? I've just learned enough that with these positive expectations play, you would think you could just spread your way to the finish line, and I've often found out that comes back to bite me, because a lot of people do that. Right? You still need to be strategic in making your tickets.
No doubt. And that part of it, I said years ago in a conversation with Ed DeRosa, I've got people who love to trot it out as some sort of a specific addressing of takeout in general. But I made the point that if you can't build a winning ticket, If you don't win, the takeout is extraneous. I mean, it you know, the first order of business is understanding the game, and then, you know, then applying that, you know, that knowledge successfully. But these, you know, these opportunities and being aware, you know, I personally don't know how long, Marshall, in my development as a player years ago, you know, going back to the 80s, I'm not sure when it was that I even, you know, was first made aware of the takeout levels and what, you know, what its relationship, what its correlationship was to the, you know, to the churn and you know, how, if you weren't winning, how quickly your money was disappearing. And, you know, so having that awareness and then trying to, you know, to pick the spots. I mean, we could also separately get into a, you know, into a win price and a mutual price correlation. You know, where I had a friend I met years ago at the Hippodrome, one of the hippo clubs in Montreal, and the most disciplined guy I've ever seen. He would wait weeks and weeks at a time to make a bet. He needed 9-2 or better on the horses that he was tracking. And he'd come some afternoons or nights, he'd come into the Hippo Club and he'd have, you know, he'd have his papers with him and he'd wait and watch the tote. And if the horse dipped below 9-2, he'd walk out and not play. I mean, I've never seen it. And sometimes he would literally go a month between plays. But I mean, when he bet, he was sending it in. I mean, but I've never seen anybody as disciplined as that.
Well, that's the way to do it. I mean, I've rarely been that disciplined. I've learned that I've actually now accepted that I like to bet and I like to play every race, but I've tried to allow myself to be a $2 better when I have no strong opinion, and then try to bet substantially when I do have a strong opinion instead of bet the same amount. Right. I mean, that's always, you know, it's interesting. You were sort of growing up as a horse player who came about it, not through any sort of, you know, no one ever sort of took me to the track. And so my education was from books, and there's just not a lot of books on how to bet. There's a lot of books on how to handicap, but not a lot of books on how to bet. And I think part of that is that, you know, sort of when the you know, real growth in the literature in the 70s and 80s, there weren't a lot of exotic wagers. And so, you know, the proliferation of exotic, you know, in the 90s and the 2000s, and the multi-race wagers and tries and supers and super high fives, that the literature hasn't caught up. And I think that, you know, that was, you know, that's been sort of a constant struggle. It's figuring out what pools to bet, figuring out how to attack certain races. You know, to be honest with you, that, you know, where horse players struggle against computer teams is not from the handicapping perspective, right? But it's in the construction of bets. Computers can construct superfectives, construct pick six wagers, very efficiently, where it's very challenging for a horse player to do so.
Absolutely. And these are all topics that, boy, we could go on in that direction. But as you can tell, for those of you that are hearing Marshall for the first time, and I doubt that that's the case for most of you, this is why he had a horse break her maiden over the weekend called Tis a Sharpie.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Lacey Goddad, a horse that we claimed at Oaklawn, gave some time, and then broke her maiden first out, maiden 25, you know, on maiden 25 on the small stage at Laurel for a small purse. But it's always fun to have winners, and always fun to work with, you know, trainers who are up and comers, right? Like Lacey Goddard at 10 Strike Racing. We have horses Lacey Goddard, Matt Shire, Bentley Combs, Jason Barkley, Brittany Trimble Russell, who we think are going to be big time down the road, and we're trying to help them give them their shot. Bentley Combs had a winner for us at Saratoga, and I was there, and it was about you know, maybe one of my biggest highlights in being involved in the sport is being there for a winner at Saratoga. Sort of nothing like it. My whole family with me, horse coming from the clouds, a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And on that topic, a quick 10 strike update. It's been a pretty magical year overall for you and the team.
Yeah, I mean Warriors Charge is coming off colic surgery. We'll be going back to Brad Cox in a couple of weeks. I mean, obviously he ran well in the Preakness. We gambled by supplementing him in the Preakness, and he ran a solid fourth. And then, you know, colic about a month later. So what's frustrating is we missed all the good 3-year-old races, but we're excited about his 4-year-old year. We'll target the races at Oaklawn for him. We have Clay and I bred a filly named Critical Value who broke her maiden at Saratoga with Jeremiah Englehart. She'll go in the Maid of the Mist in the New York Bred Showcase Day. Dot Matrix will run in the Ashley T. Cole, which I think is on Sunday. And he's a homebred for me. And we've got a couple other runners. We've had 54 winners this year, and having a good year. We've also been buying at Keeneland. We bought a number of yearlings that we're excited about down the road. Into Mischief, looking at Lucky, a couple Munnings, and Empire Makers. So we're putting together our horses for the future, and we've got a lot of runners now. So it's really exciting. We've got a great team. Clay Sanders and I are the managing partners. Liz Crow is our agent and our stable manager. And we're excited about what we've got going.
Well, I always enjoy a conversation with Marshall. And whether it's we have him on at Saratoga with Seth and I, and opportunities like this to pick specific topics and specific betting opportunities that are in the headlines. And Marshall, I appreciate it. Obviously the school year well underway, right? You're a month in already at Rhodes.
Yeah, it still doesn't seem like it, but I gave my first exams last night, but we're a month in and all is going. I mean, it is something about the South where my kids went back to school on August 12th. And so I'm only able to do the first couple of weeks of Saratoga, but that's the highlight of my summer and my kids' summer. We very much enjoy that, and then it's back to school. And it'll be around soon enough.
Marshall Graham, everybody, Truxton Stables on your Twitter. You should be following him. I always retweet every time Marshall discusses any of these kinds of topics. I'm curious, how do you look on Saturday against Millsaps? How do the links look for anybody?
Well, I think Millsaps is pretty darn good. So I think the Rhodes has gone off to a little bit of a slow start, putting a few things together. So I'm not optimistic, but I think this team will get things going they'll win a few games, start putting a few things together, but a little bit of a rocky start.
Well, you got a big home game, maybe the homecoming, I guess, against Sewanee.
That's always the big game, and winning that game will make the year, exactly.
I love it. I've never asked. I don't know what prompted me to ask you about the Rhodes College sports program, but I was curious what the nickname was, and they're the Lynx. It's pretty good. I love it. Marshall, you're the best. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
Not at all. Marshall Graham, always a great conversation. Let's take a timeout. We've got John White coming in a little bit, but we got a quick visit to Bill Downs, Indiana. Let's see what's going on this week at Indiana Grand. Back after this.